Joining us now is Robbie Stanley. You can hear him on Robbie and Rex Road every single morning on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game from 6 to 9 a.m. Robbie, Predators, Canucks, and it is locked in that you and Joe will have very little sleep, at least on Sunday and Tuesday. Overall impressions of this matchup and how the Predators kind of match up with the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, first off, I was ungodly excited about the start times at home, so at least we'll get some sleep when that comes about.
4 p.m. Love that.
I know. Big fan of it. Look, I think this is a really interesting matchup, and I think it's going to be a challenge for the Predators. You know, you look at Vancouver, they're very deep down the middle, and that's going to be an area where I think the Predators are going to be hard-pressed to match up against JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and you know, they're just Elias Lindholm. They got a lot of really good players up the middle. But I really like the way the Predators play down the stretch. I really like the underlying numbers that I'm seeing about the chances you're generating, how much you have the puck. You know, UC Saros has played a lot better. There's a lot about the way the Predators play down the stretch that I think should be encouraging if you're a Predators fan. And look, I said it this morning, I've got the Preds winning this series in 7 games. Ooh. I think it's a toss-up. I think it's going to be a series that comes right down to the very end, but I think the Predators certainly are capable of winning it.
I'm with you, Robbie. I don't think it's going to be – D-Bay said Preds in 5.
Yeah, I got Preds in 5.
And I love his optimism. Yeah. I know, it's spicy, but I'm with you. I'm going to take a very tightly contested 7-game series. I do think the Predators end up winning it, but in your opinion, what's the difference for the Predators?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I like the way that Saros is trending right now. For the most part, I think he's been really good in the second half of the season. And number two, like, Vancouver's been great all year, and they're super talented. But I do wonder this time of year, when all of the little things turn into really big things, the Predators just flat out have more guys who have been there and done that before. Like, Ryan O'Reilly is a playoff MVP. He won a Conn Smythe and a Stanley Cup. They got a 2-time winner in Ryan McDonough, a 2-time winner in Luke Shen. Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi have made deep runs. They got a lot of guys who've been there and done this before. And look, that's not everything. Like, you know, I think sometimes we make a little bit too much of playoff experience, but it is something. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure on Vancouver, and particularly early in the series. Like, if the Predators come out in game one and they make a statement and they win that game, the noise is going to get loud in Vancouver. I've seen these series before with Canadian markets. It gets loud very quickly. And I always wonder how, like, younger teams and teams that aren't that experienced in dealing with stuff like this, how do they handle it? So I like the Predators' matchup advantage from that perspective. And there's something about this Predators team with kind of the moxie that they have down the stretch here. And I think you can trace a lot of that back to guys like McDonough and O'Reilly that I really like and I think really suits them well this time of year. So those are a couple of the reasons why I like the Predators' chances in this series.
Robbie Stanley is with us. Robbie, I'm with you with the experience side of things. It's not everything, but it is something. You know, not getting too high, not getting too low, just being on that stage in the past and knowing what it takes to get through the, you know, the just how tough especially the first round is and to get through the slog of a 7-game series. But if we're going to talk about experience, I think that we would be remiss to not mention how UC Saros doesn't have the most experience in the playoffs. So what about the UC Saros side of things? That the small amount of playoff experience that he does have, it hasn't been, you know, the best resume in the postseason.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out a lot. And I think not only for this series, like I think you're going to start to, like, as Barry Trotz continues to piece together what the plan is at goalie long term, like, to me, this is a really important piece of it, right? Like, if Saros comes out and he plays great and the Predators go on, like, a run to the conference final, well, I would assume that probably factors pretty heavily into your decision as to whether or not to extend him to a long-term contract. You know, if they come out and they get blitzed by Vancouver in the first round, they're out in 5 games, and Saros doesn't play well, then I think the conversation of what you do in goal moving forward becomes pretty loud again. So I think it's big for the future of the position. And look, I think we all know that UC Saros is a great goaltender. But the fact of the matter is he's had the bubble series against Arizona, which was weird, and they played terrible in that series, and I thought he was average to below average. They had the Carolina series where they were totally outgunned by Carolina. He played great in that series, and they gave him a run. And then a couple years ago, he didn't play. I mean, he was hurt against Colorado. and we know what happened in that series. So there's not a ton to point to UC Soros. On the other side of things with Thatcher Demko, I think he's got like 4 career playoff games. So there's not a ton of playoff experience and goal in this series, but I think this is massive for Soros in terms of where his career goes from here. They're not going to base the entire decision off the outcome of this series, but I do think it's a pretty important piece of the puzzle when you're determining what to do from here if you're Barry Trotz.
Robbie, we'll talk with Robbie Stanley. I got the Predators, like Caroline said. I got the Predators in winning 5. Y'all need to stop being scared. Just say it, man.
I love it.
Come on, just say 5. But you did.
Why not 4?
Why not 4? I take the clean sweep. I got a broom ready at my house, so I'm ready to use it if necessary. But you talked about UC Soros and his play. Because of the – and this may be if they – you know, I believe they will continue to go – continue to advance in the playoffs, but this may ultimately be their longest, you know, trip back and forth, back and forth. With that being said, how do you think they factor Lincoln into this whole mix? Do you think if this team comes out and win game one, then that gives, you know, Coach Bruno a better idea of how to use Lincoln? If they come out and lose game one, do they stick with Soros a little bit longer? Because to me, this back and forth, say it goes 6 or 7, that's a lot of travel back and forth for both teams. And you have to have 2 goalies in situations like this.
Well, I think they're really confident in Kevin Lankinen. I think that he's proven time and time again this year that he can step in and do the job. D-Mace, I was really curious to see what the schedule looked like because there was so much talk about, like, could there be a back-to-back at some point in the series? And the answer is no. Like, they avoided that. So my guess, and I could be wrong about this, my guess is that Soros is going to get all of them. That's just my guess, that regardless of how long it goes, he'll get all of them. The travel is an interesting aspect, though, because, I mean, for the Predators – in the playoffs, you can't get farther away than Vancouver. Like, Vancouver is the furthest possible matchup that you could have. So if this thing gets to 6 or 7 games, you're talking about a trip out there, a trip back, another trip out there, another trip back, and then potentially another trip out there after that. That is a lot of travel. That's a lot of time on an airplane. And we saw it in 2016. That can wear on you after a while. So, like, the travel is a big part of this. I think there are some Predators fans who are scared to death of it, just going back to 2016. Now, keep in mind, in 2016, they played 7 games in California and then played another 7 games back in California with San Jose. That's 14. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, you could see where travel could weigh on you. So just because they're going to Vancouver doesn't mean that the series has to go 7 games. It doesn't mean that the travel really has to wear them out. But I think it's going to be Soros in all of them. I do wonder how the travel affects the goaltending matchup, though, because – some of this in the playoffs, as we know, is just about endurance and the war of attrition. And that's a big part of kind of navigating the schedule here in the playoffs.
Now, is this series going to be predicated or based on how the frontline guys do, the top scorers, or is it more so the back end guys, the second, you know, second tier scoring? Is that what's going to put Nashville over the edge? Or is it, hey, listen, the Yossis, the Forsberg, they need to play, you know, lights out in order for this team to win? Or do they have a little leeway in that where they can play good hockey, but then those back end guys need to play, you know, as good or even better than the frontline guys?
I think the frontline guys are going to be what carries them. And look, if they're going to make a deep run, they have to get scoring from Tommy Novak. They have to get scoring from Luke Evangelista. And you've got to have goals kind of chipping in every now and then from your Michael McCarron and your Cole Smiths and your, you know, Ryan McDonough's of the world. Like, you've got to have some guys step up in big moments. But, like, if the Predators are going to win this series and if the Predators are going to make a deep playoff run, then it's going to have to be because Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist and Roman Yossi carry them. Like, that's what it's going to have to be. And those guys did a great job of carrying them in the second half of the season. Now, you got some of both, right? Like, you had those guys playing at an extremely high level, and then you did get some timely goals from Novak and Evangelista and Sherwood and guys like that. So that's the perfect scenario where you're getting both, and that's kind of what they got over that 18-game stretch where they went 16-0-2. But to me, D-Mace, like, everybody makes a big deal about secondary scoring, and I get it. Like, I'm a believer in that too. But ultimately, you need your best players to perform at a high level when you need them the most. And if the Predators get that, I think they're going to win the series. If they don't get that, then they're probably going to be sitting at home after the first round.
Now, what is another area that if in order for the Nashville Predators to win this game, win this series, that they have to do well in? Another area where, you know, because you look at the teams and you look at it, it's sort of evenly matched in a sense. Is it just the experience that can potentially get Nashville over, or is it somewhere else within the game that you must see a clear-cut advantage for the Nashville Predators?
I think it's a couple things. I do think, like, handling the highs and lows of a playoff series, because there will be both. I mean, they're going to lose some games in this series. They're going to win some games, I think, in this series. And how you manage that is a big deal. But I also think, you know, there are moments in a series, whether you get a 5-on-3 power play or you're down or you're up by a goal late in the third period and they pull the goalie. Like, what you do in big moments like that, I think ultimately is the difference. And I think everybody, like, if you're a Preds fan and you watch regular season hockey and then you translate it to the playoffs, a lot of people think the referees just kind of swallow their whistles and they let them play. And I do think for the most part there's fewer penalties that are called in the playoffs, but they're still going to call some penalties. And we've seen it before, like, the special teams is such a big part of this. And you don't necessarily, if you're the Predators, like, you don't have to have your power play humming along and clicking at 30%. But when you have an opportunity late in games on the power play to score a big goal, to put yourself up a goal, or to score a big goal to tie the game, like, you need your big players to come through in those moments. And sometimes, D-Mates, like, it's not about how many you score. Sometimes it's about when you score it. And I think that's a big deal for the Predators here. So I think winning or breaking even in the special teams battle is really key for the Predators. If they can at least break even there, then I like their chances 5-on-5 in this series. But you have to find a way to not let special teams become a huge advantage for Vancouver the other way.
Talking with Robbie Stanley, previewing the Predators and Canucks in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Robbie, you bring up Luke Evangelista, and Joe had a great breakdown in The Athletic, learning a little bit more about Luke Evangelista and his personality behind the scenes, which I think we're starting to get, you know, peel back the layers on that a little bit, you know, from the Winnipeg game, the go bad boy. Go, bad boy. And little pieces from Joe's article that were really fun. But I think the foundation of it is Luke Evangelista is becoming more and more a guy that the Predators can rely on. What kind of an X factor can he be in the playoffs?
I think a big one. And he's kind of a special kid. Like, I've been talking about him for a couple of years. And I remember last year I said that I think eventually he can grow into a point-per-game player in this league. And some people thought I was nuts. And then now I think you're kind of starting to see what I've seen in this kid for a while, which is he's got an elite hockey sense out there. Like, he can make some plays that just not a lot of people can make. And look, there's still plenty of room for him to grow physically. There's still a lot of maturing to his game that's going to need to take place. He's got to get quicker, all those things. But one of the most encouraging parts about this run that they've been on has been him. I think he's played great down the stretch. And look, the playoffs are a different animal. They're going to target him. I mean, they're going to try to push him around and really make life difficult for him. And it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to it with the physicality of the playoffs. But I really like where his game is at right now. You know, I know for some Predators fans, you look at the young guys and you're like, okay, well, this wasn't really the year for the young guys that we thought. Like, Cody Glass didn't play all that great. Tomasino and Parsonen aren't even up here anymore. They're in Milwaukee. I think you could feel really, really good about Evangelista and where his game is, and not only where it is, but where it's going. So they're going to need him in this series. Like, I mean, they're going to need some secondary scoring, as D-Mace pointed out there, and I think he's as equipped as anybody, along with Novak, to get that done for him.
Yeah, that's what we talked about that yesterday, how you're going to largely rely on the Forsbergs, the Yossis, the Nyquists, the O'Reillys, but you're going to need some help from some of these secondary scorers as well. One thing that we talked a lot about, I guess a couple of weeks ago, was Predators fans' anxiety about potentially peaking too soon. I look at the Canucks, and you could maybe make that argument about the Canucks as well. They came out of the gate swinging. They were hot in the first half of the season. And then in the second half of this season, they kind of trailed off. Is that truly the Canucks potentially peaking too soon? Or is that as simple as Thatcher Demko just wasn't available for, you know, a large part of the second half of the season?
I think Demko is a big part of it. Like, they still have so much firepower that I wouldn't worry too much about them if I were a Canucks fan. Just the same way, like, you know, people have made a big deal about the Predators. They went 16-0-2, and then I think their record in the last 10 was like 4-5-1 and something like that. I think people make way too much of a deal of those kind of things. I've seen teams that were terrible in their last 10 games heading into the playoffs go on to win the Stanley Cup. And I've seen teams that have gone 8-0-2 or 9-1-1 in their last 10 heading into the playoffs get beaten 5 games in the first round and they're done. So the playoffs really are kind of a reset for all of it. I think confidence is big. So I do think the Predators have a lot of confidence right now, which I think is good, and I think that translates over. But I think if you're a Vancouver fan, and some of the numbers have gone down, like Adam Bingen went through it this morning, they were a much better team in the first half of the season than they have been in the second half. And it's not just the goaltending. Like, their 5-on-5 scoring has gone down. So, I mean, if you want to, you could find some reasons to be really encouraged if you're the Predators, just based on kind of the way Vancouver has been trending. But I've seen this a lot in the playoffs, and people are doing it with Colorado right now too. Man, they don't look very good heading into the playoffs. This is a kind of a classic reset, and you never really know how the last 10 or 15 games of the regular season are going to translate into the playoffs. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't at all, and it's what makes this tournament so interesting and why I think the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best thing in sports.
Now, Robbie, let's segue out of hockey because we're going to be talking hockey pretty much today and moving forward. You know, I think we're going to be talking about hockey for a while because I expect the Nashville Predators to, you know, do what they need to do to advance. But the NFL draft, we haven't at least I haven't spoken with you since all this draft stuff started to come up. Draft is next week, next Thursday, so we're less than a week away. But what do you think the most likely scenario is for the Tennessee Titans? Do you think they move out of that 7th pick, or do you think they take player of need?
I think the most likely scenario is they stick at 7 and they take a player of need. And the answer that I have of what I think is probably going to happen is pretty boring. Like, I think Joe Alt is probably going to be the guy, and he's probably going to be the pick there. The thing that's really intriguing to me, and D-Max, I think you and I may disagree a little bit on this. Like, if Malik Nabers and Joe Alt are there at the same time, what do you do? And my answer is Nabers. Like, I think Nabers has a chance to be special at the NFL level. I know the Titans have Ridley and they've got Hopkins, but I still think they need a young guy that can be a foundational player to build around. I know they need a left tackle. So, to me, it really comes down to Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan. Like, as you're doing your evaluations, who do you think is a better player? Do you think it's Malik Nabers? Do you think it's Joe Alt? And if you do think it's Malik Nabers, I think you should take it. But I think what ultimately is going to happen is going to be Joe Alt there at 7. They take Joe Alt, and they have their franchise left tackle. And then your hope is after that, you don't have to worry about it for the next 8 to 10 years, and he's your guy, and you've got a foundation over there of Alt and Skaronski that you build around moving forward.
Robbie, I was thinking about you last night when I saw the news that Andre Dillard is headed to Green Bay.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, thank God he's not starting, but now I was hoping the Packers were going to draft like a corner in the first round, and now I'm like, please, for the love of God, draft the Marius Mims so we can get as many tackles as possible.
You already have one.
Andre Dillard.
Hey, y'all got one.
You got one.
You got a starting left tackle, man. Come on.
Oh, is that what he is? I thought he was a practice.
Well, he's a starter here.
He was a starter here. I mean, he. If they didn't, they. I said this to Caroline. They must didn't watch any tape from last year, the Green Bay Packers, because had they saw the tape, I don't think they would have signed him. That's just me.
I mean, maybe look, he made Arden Key look like an All-Pro in camp last year, so maybe they're just trying to bolster the confidence of one of their edge rushers in training camp. But we're gonna line you up against Andre Dillard every rep. and you're going to feel like you're Superman heading into the regular season. It was a ridiculous move.
Jordan Love will have zero confidence. Yeah, but the edge rushers, though, they are going to be feeling like they're on cloud nine. D-Mace and I talked about before the Titans acquired Calvin Ridley, like, who is wide receiver two going to be? And I said, look, it's a Tennessee two, but it's like a Cincinnati four. Like, your number two receiver would not be a two anywhere else. We'll call Andre Dillard a Tennessee tackle. He's a starting tackle in Tennessee, but not anywhere else.
Robbie, I'm not sure Andre Dillard could start for the University of Tennessee. Yes.
He may be right about that.
Robbie Stanley, host of Robbie and Reich's Road, 6 to 9 a.m. on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Rob, appreciate you stopping by. Get some sleep today and tomorrow, because I know you're not going to get much of it over the next few days.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, y'all. I appreciate you.
Appreciate it.